The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right, I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast, but the SGG, that's not the important part. The important part is the QA, because we like to make this a bit more of an interactive conversation with folks on a Monday morning. It's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday, is we can see what news has been, you know, breaking over the weekend. I also get sort of a feel of the news from the last week. It's not just plugging through headlines in your social media feed. These are stories we want to keep up with over time as developments evolve. So that's why we like to do this more Q&A style. I'm already seeing a great crew in my chat right now. I got a warning from Restream that some of my platforms are having difficulty connecting. So apologies if the live stream gets a little borky. Hopefully we'll be good for a good at least 90 minutes or 2 hours of podcasting goodness. But I'm seeing Gary the Fireman, Fat Produce, with a subscription from Prime on Twitch. He's been subscribed for 26 months. He's my brother from another mother. Andrew, thank you so much for supporting the show. We got J-Man150. We got John Gao, Ron Guido. We got Sam. Everyone in the chat needs to harass Sam, because Sam also runs a great conversational hangout tech podcast chat kind of show. And I've been trying to promote his show on my audio podcast. So the audio feed goes out, and I like to put in like a little mid-break where you can hear someone else's voice, and Sam won't get me an audio clip to promote his show. So everyone say, hey, Sam, what up? What's up with that? We got Vince Novoa, I think I said something. Simon Says Hypno, TED Talks Tech, posting videos to the Discord. Lampros, JMX Warrior, Linden, Dave Burns, Muppinish Tech Boy. We got a good crew. Pakistan, Pup on Tech. This is going to be a fun show. I can already feel it. Sam, I am just a tool, LOL. Copy Cash, what up with that, Sam? What up with that? And Simon Says Hypno, I feel bad for missing Sam and Joe's live stream, but Sunday nights are tough these days. Sam and Joe, that is a fun one to also catch up with if you're part of a replay crew. especially like, hey, I just need some content through the week. I want some voices kind of talking in my ear, arguing about like what the definition of pizza should be. And I just want that while I'm kind of like getting scripts written and stuff like that. I very much enjoy, even when I can't stalk their stream, I very much enjoy kind of catching up with Sam and Joe. The full name of the podcast is The Nomad Tech Project with Sam and Joe. So I've been appropriately corrected by Sam, who won't get me the audio file to promote a show on my podcast. We got Jermaine. What's up, Jermaine? Everyone's saying hi. Jermaine saying hi, everyone. JMX, I believe they mostly stream on YouTube. I don't know if they have a Twitch. And really, Sam and Joe should look at some kind of post-show audio distribution, because their show would very much benefit from a traditional RSS-style podcast, if they don't have one. I genuinely don't know, because I've only ever caught them on YouTube. So it's pretty great. Okay. First of all, happy belated Father's Day if you were able to celebrate with some family, or even just take some time out of your busy, busy weekend and busy, busy week to kind of pamper yourself. As I've mentioned on so many previous podcasts, I am very lucky to have been raised in a family where we're just down for any excuse to party. We want to make these days special. But it's the celebration of the idea, not, oh, did you buy someone the right gift, and did you get them a card, and did you give them a gift card, and did you do all of this stuff and spend consumerism? Really, it's just, do you get to break bread with people who care about you, and can you do that regularly? And I was very fortunate to have my folks out over the weekend. My daughter's dance studio decided that Father's Day would be the day to do their big end of year recital before really getting into the summer. And so Father's Day, my adorable 7-year-old daughter was on stage for roughly 2 minutes of a 3-hour dance company recital, and my dad was in the audience for that too. So it was a bit of a marathon. It was like literally. Actually, I think when he was younger, I think he actually did run a marathon in about that amount of time, maybe a little faster. So we spent most of the day in this really lovely theater, watching her sort of students and classmates and the other parts, the other members of this company perform. But she had her little ballet, and she was wonderful. And I was really excited to see her kind of take the stage. Coming from a family of presenters and producers, and all of us have some kind of public speaking skills and things like that. Especially with Marie and I, with our backgrounds, we should not have been surprised that our daughter would rise to the occasion of being on stage. So it was a really lovely Father's Day. And then I woke up full because we ate way too much. We went to our favorite deli. It was really good. It was really, really good times. Then this morning, sort of continuing the festivities over the weekend, I'd also like to extend everyone a happy Juneteenth. Happy to see that this is a more recent addition to the slate of federally recognized holidays here in the United States. And again, an opportunity to have conversations and to remember history and to kind of tell stories, especially where your families might come from and how they might be here or wherever you might live around the world. I think these are the days that kind of help us understand where we could go by recognizing where we've been. And especially for the communities of people that are going to be apt to really sort of celebrate or make a tradition out of this day, I hope you guys are finding some fun activities and some fun family time. And again, if this becomes an eating holiday, I'm on board. I'm a big fan of the eating holidays, you know, like where Thanksgiving can sometimes be tonally problematic for the histories of indigenous populations here in the United States. And the fact that I am directly descended from both sides of what was conflict and the most problematic aspects of what makes Thanksgiving a holiday to celebrate. We can always use these days as days of remembrance. We had this really like deep conversation. I won't go too much into it on the podcast, but it was like, you know, looking at Thanksgiving, and then Columbus Day was another one where We don't really want to lose the day, but we do maybe want to rebrand it. We could have a conversation about what a Columbus Day should mean in the United States with as diverse a population of people as we have here. And if we don't have the day, if we just get rid of the day and act like nothing happened, that doesn't help our history, that doesn't help our storytelling, that doesn't help any of these communities. There are still inequities that we could be addressing. And so again, where a day off on a Monday gives you a three-day weekend, that's great. I kind of feel Juneteenth could also be used to help further storytelling. And so hopefully communities are being able to benefit from that. So happy Juneteenth for everyone who might be listening here. Do you want to throw another shout out here just as we transition out of my rambling intro to Concept Creator, another tier one sub on the Twitch. Because Juan doesn't have a soundboard. Subscribed for 4 months. Thank you so much, Concept Creator. Really appreciate all the support and all of the contributions, and definitely the comments as we've gotten into conversations during this stream. So, yes, happy Juneteenth. Sam is answering questions about his podcast. Hopefully a few more people will continue to contribute and listen to his show too. And then that will encourage him to get me the sponsor plug so that I can promote his podcast. I might make that the running theme of this week's episode. In fact, it would be really cool if Sam, if he could just get it to me by the end of this podcast. He has 2 hours. Ready, break. JMan150 hopes everyone is staying hydrated. Definitely appreciate that. Ah, Jermaine, no problem. Well, thank you so much, man. I really do appreciate it. And Kappa Cash, we rebranded Columbus Day to National Day, so we kept the holiday just rebranded. I feel like this is the correct... That's the correct play. And especially, like I said, you know, my family history is pretty diverse, and I come from a line of indigenous population and a line of sort of European settlers and conquerors. And you could imagine that, especially from where I come from, that is a very divisive kind of conversation to have about the history and how it should be presented. Oh, these are intrepid explorers who also maybe committed mass genocide. You know, you don't want to... You don't want to, like, tank a conversation, but you also want to properly highlight what the people really did when populations mixed. So it's pretty great. It's pretty great. Sore Hunter, what? Is it only a 2-hour podcast this week? I might actually try and cap us a little early. News got a bit funky. And I do want to sort of build just a little bit of extra time, like we keep saying, so we can have a more open-ended conversation about stuff when we get to the end of this. I am sitting on so many phone videos, and let me tell you, folks, housekeeping is super light this week, but it's in part because it's also just become such a slog trying to work with companies on things like sponsored content. I have 4 videos in production that should have published already. And we're still going through communication issues. We're still going through confirmations. Oh, well, we need to see a revision on this. And then you send the revision. But why wasn't it uploaded to YouTube? Because it's just a revision. And it sucks all the energy out of producing the fun stuff. YouTube has become so openly hostile and toxic to just broad tech channel conversations to be able to monetize that kind of traffic. Like, I don't even think my Ulanzi tripod video has broken 1,000 views yet. I actually haven't even looked. That is something that I feel more than 1% of my audience would care about. This is one of the coolest tripods I've ever used. It is incredibly inexpensive. It is super lightweight. It is feature-packed. This is, if ever we were to talk about a significant evolution in the technology of building a tripod, something I feel so many people would be interested in, that video still hasn't broken 1,000 views. Like, YouTube killed it before it had a chance to really go out and find any audience. If you are watching this on YouTube, you're not watching it on my main channel, because if you put a podcast on or a live stream on your main channel, it hurts your channel metrics and it makes all of your other videos perform worse. So we're constantly playing this cat and mouse game, and none of that traffic is really monetizing anymore. YouTube is not the place to be unless you already had millions of subscribers. We're basically just using them as free server hosting at this point, because it's not a discovery platform, because my subscribers are not discovering my videos. those. So it's pretty gross. So unfortunately, that means you have to play other games with like sponsorships or branded content. And man, it's no fun. It is really no fun at all. I'm going to drink some coffee. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to mute this for just a second. So, I mean, like, Sore Hunter, this is kind of what I'm talking. It's a tripod, man. I'm into photography and I already have a tripod. I haven't seen the video. I mean, if you're into photography and you care about the absolute best carbon fiber, lightweight video, fluid head kind of contraption that you can pack with amazing accessories that are attachable and the ability to, like, quickly swap plates and get a phone on there or work with smaller cameras, and you'd want that at a price point that is significantly undercutting companies like Peak Design. Apparently YouTube doesn't think you care about that kind of stuff. YouTube's recommendation engine thinks you don't like topics like that. So, you know, if I were running only a photography channel, then they would probably send my video out more to people who were interested in, like, camera tech. But if I try to diversify and I have, like, a channel that talks about phone and lifestyle and charging and battery and disaster prep and things that I think all kind of tie together, well, no, YouTube doesn't want to deal with that. Hey, Tech Loving Mama giving a wave to everybody here. Everybody give a wave to Tech Loving Mama. And Dave Burns, TikTok. Oof. TikTok drives YouTube's recommendation algorithm. It's like, how can we make your content as disposable as possible? Hey, we know you really put together an in-depth look at this product and you spent a lot of time putting the video together and you've got tons of B-roll and outdoor shots and like panning and tracking and all that cool stuff. We think maybe 500 people should watch it. Congratulations, you're on YouTube. So, housekeeping, the major video that went out is a product that I'm really excited about. And this was sponsored by the company Robo & Kala to talk about their, here, I'm just going to pull up somegadgetguide.com. This is the Robo & Kala 2-in-1 convertible laptop, and you immediately look at it, and it is spot on, feature for feature, spec for spec, a Surface Pro 9 5G competitor, which is undercutting Microsoft at significantly lower prices. And that's the kind of evolution we really want to see. We've got a whole bunch of products coming out. Apparently, Google has now rediscovered their fondness for tablets. We're going to have the Pixel tablet coming out soon. The OnePlus Pad is out now. I'm sure there's going to be a Galaxy Tab refresh. That is probably going to be one of the best products Samsung makes this year. And when we look at these gadgets that are larger slate but offer respectable compute power and could find some footing, like you could look at an Android or a mobile powered tablet and say, this could be a laptop replacement. It is streamlined. It's not as feature complete. It doesn't have a full operating system. You can't run your Windows programs on it. But we kind of dropped the ball on like Chrome OS. Chrome OS became sort of synonymous with student grade web browsing and like word processing. And yeah, they added support for Android apps, but if you have an x86 powered Chromebook, then you're probably not performing much better than a lower mid-ranger phone with a lot of the hardware that goes into Chrome, goes into the inexpensive Chromebooks. So Robo & Kala sponsored this video to talk about Windows on ARM, because this Robo & Kala is using a little ARM chipset. I had my microphones on it, almost flung my microphones across the office. So it looks like a Surface Pro 9. It's super, super sleek. It's a 2-in-1 tablet-y contraption with a magnetic pen that attaches to the side and a magnetic keyboard and some really fun tricks that even the Surface doesn't really properly replicate. But when they sent it to me, I kind of, it's so clearly targeting the Surface Pro 9 while they were looking more at, hey, we really want to talk about the flexibility of this. It's an ARM processor from Qualcomm. It's not an Intel. It's not an AMD machine. So we want to show you can run most of your Windows apps with a few just clumsy bits that haven't been properly emulated for. And I show some of those clumsy bits. But, you know, also we want to show that you can install Android apps on this thing too. So I was like, cool. And then it came in and it was like, this is so close to a Surface that I kind of had to spend a good chunk of the video also sort of turning it into a Surface comparison. So I sort of took a step. It's still a sponsored video, but they approved me saying like, well, there are still some things that a Surface Pro 9 might do better. But... so I had a lot of fun with that one. And genuinely, this has kind of taken over where I was using a Surface Laptop Go 2 as sort of our ubiquitous around the house machine. The Robo Ancala has taken over and it's been awesome taking it out of the office. Like where maybe I would normally have used a laptop dock with my Motorola and used Ready 4. If I have my backpack, I'll slide this in there, and it takes up even less space than some of these laptop and portable monitors that I've used with phone desktop modes. And it's a full build of Windows, so I get full Microsoft Office apps and stuff. So TK Babe just got one too. We've been talking about it for the last couple weeks on Best of Our Week. The proper video that I have out is out now. And then I'll be spending a little bit more time doing some comparisons outside of the sponsorship. So I feel like this is kind of going to become one of my demonstration devices. Like if I have something to show you about Windows, you're going to see the Robo Ancala on video. So it's really been a fun machine to play with and significantly less expensive than a Surface Pro 9 SQ3. So that was the big video. I also put out a little short making fun of one of the comments that I got on that video from someone who was complaining about the screen aspect ratio. This is the thing that motivates angry comments or, this insightful level of commentary where it's like, oh, the screen is the slightly wrong shape. Big miss. Okay. So I did sort of a reaction video, a reaction short to that comment. But I'm going to have a few other things coming out. We're going to be spending some time with some earbuds, getting back on track, some audio reviewing, especially now that my ears have mostly healed from that last terrible infection. And then I know I've been teasing this, but I have a Sony versus Xiaomi camera comparison and the Xiaomi 13 Ultra camera review script ready. And I'm hoping we'll get through. I'm hoping we'll get through this week with more content than I put out this last week. I've been having those conversations with a couple of the companies that I was supposed to already be publishing branded content for, sponsored content. And at this point, I'm saying, like, I can't wait for you anymore. We were supposed to go, so I held this day on my calendar. And then I didn't put out a video because you messed it up. So now you have to wait for me. I hate having to deal with this. YouTube used to be so much more fun. Raymondit is asking, how's the battery life with using it as a daily driver? I cover that in the video because I've been using it for a bit. Kappa Cash enjoyed my reaction video. Soar Hunter, wrong shape? What is the right shape for a screen? So if you go to my short, it's a pithy straw man version of the comment. And the person that I'm reacting to, we got into a back and forth that was really just annoying. So I ended up muting his comment because I really did want to do this short. So you can't go to the original video and brigade his comment. Like, I'm keeping his privacy protected because I thought it was not a very insightful comment. I'm not looking to make people go and attack him on my YouTube channel. I feel like that's unseemly. But I still want to make fun of the comment because I felt like the comment was clumsy. So you catch the short, you'll get the scoop there. I have a longer explanation of the interaction that I had with this individual on Patreon. Patreon.com/somegadgetguy. I posted a production diary talking about, like, I don't even know what this guy's talking about. And I'm trying to look into it because he said it so, like, confidently. What, I mean, like, I really felt I was missing something. What am I missing? Did I really misrepresent the functionality of this product? Is there something that's a glaring oversight? And I couldn't get information out of this individual to sort of understand what was the issue. So I don't know. So I made a funny video instead. Raymondi, yes. The Robo Ancala has 16 gigs of RAM with a 512 gig drive for ballpark price of like a Galaxy Tab S8 Plus, and you can upgrade the SSD. So again, like the Surface Pro, you can pop the rear. There's a tiny cover for the SSD, and you can get in there and replace. You can replace the SSD, which again I feel is a very valuable component to have in a tablet that no other tablet is gonna let us. You can't upgrade the storage on an iPad. You can't upgrade the storage on a Pixel or a OnePlus or a Galaxy Tab. And I don't mean like add a memory card. I mean like take out the SSD, put in new SSD. And in a year, I might want to switch to a terabyte, right? So I could pop out that 512. I could use that 512 in something else. And then I can kind of get on. It's pretty great. So I'm really digging it. Raymond is maybe mentioning the sale price because it's on sale for a ridiculously low price for a full Windows laptop. So there you go. So everything that we're going to be talking about, all of the links, all of the housekeeping, all of the show notes, you'll be able to find that on the podcast page on somegadgetguide.com. And there will be, of course, an audio version of the podcast out. Always greatly appreciate folks who are rating and reviewing the podcast on whatever podcast platform you might use, especially third-party apps. I know we've mentioned this in the past, but like with all of the drama surrounding social media services, podcasting feels like one of the last bastions of untouched old-school internet. And so, obviously, every major platform is trying to create their walled garden of podcasting, but you can still find, like, an RSS feed put into Podcast Republic can still get you the show, and you can rate it on the app, and that can still help people find content that they might care about. So, no matter what podcasting platform you're finding the show on, it's always greatly appreciated to see some reviews, some interactions, and I'm going to start trying to maybe dig through those a little bit more consistently and maybe mention a few. I get a really good review, maybe I'll read it on the show. So we're going to get into some news here. I'm going to take a quick slurp of water. So I'm going to mute my mic for just a second. And then we got to talk about the FCC. Because the FCC I was about to break out into like Eminem, but that doesn't help us right now. So hold on one second while I just take a quick drink. All right. Let me get this back here. So who is frustrated with their broadband service provider? Especially say maybe you're on cable. Maybe you have cable broadband and you do business with a company like, I don't know, Comcast, right? Anyone? I don't know that there's ever been any good public discussion or you know, like those companies who do business ratings and they talk about like, oh, consumer satisfaction. I don't think anyone's ever talked about Comcast. Right? Like, I don't think it's ever come up. Like, we share a couple jokes, some jokey jokes on the show, but not like seriously, like a good examination of business practices, looking at their quarterly financials where they keep bragging about all of the profits that they make, and then they go running to the government and lobby all of our politicians for more taxpayer dollars so that they can promise to improve broadband, but then they do a whole bunch of things like shareholder dividends and stock buybacks instead of actually rolling fiber to home, while they play more tricks with cable and DOCSIS modems so that they can fake faster broadband, but it's really not because it's not duplex. So you get like a gigabit download, but then you have like a 20 meg upload and it's only up to 20 meg, but it's not really 20 meg because it's all fake. I don't think anyone's really talked about that before. Well, the FCC would like to hear from you. So this was posted on consumercomplaints.fcc.gov. They would like some information from actual broadband subscribers about their experience with providers who have data caps. So this is their little brief. This is a really basic website, but there's a little link at the bottom, and I'm asking people to fill in. Oh, I can't even show the bottom of this website. Hold on, let me see if I can like scooch it. Do-do-do. Okay, I literally am showing the last line with the link that says, to submit a form, go here. This is the very first step of a government regulator or government agency, a government commission's process at examining the potential of redefining how different services are rated. This is step one. As we remember from this previous process regarding situations like net neutrality, what it takes to get a commission like the FCC to properly redefine a services agreement between a private institution and consumers can take years. Net neutrality took a decade before we got it sort of in place in a very weak federal standard. This is never going to be satisfactory. We are always going to be behind the current tech trends. But I am asking that people participate in the process, because if you don't, then we never go anywhere. And this is a situation where it comes to the infrastructure that we have paid for as taxpayers here in the United States several times over, and we've never received. We have extra fees, and we have sweetheart zoning deals, and taxpayer dollars go into these private companies, and they keep asking for more taxpayer funding, but then we never really get the promised upgrades. We never really get the better distribution. We never really get fiber to home, which we've paid for several times over. And then people complain like, oh, well, if we start today, it's going to be so expensive. But if you put it off another 5 years, it's going to be even more expensive. And over those 5 years, the people who are most disadvantaged in the communities around our country, who are underserved for good data, good resources, that's the future of healthcare, the future of entertainment, the future of education, we still don't have it. So we can keep putting it off, but it's going to keep getting more expensive. And for me, I believe the failing of 5G comes from the fact that we have woefully underutilized the fiber running around our country, and that we never really did fiber to the last mile. And when more communities are lit up with fiber, it makes the backhaul more accessible for larger institutions to funnel faster data to the cell phone towers, and then we would have the real version of 5G that we were promised. But if you live in an area where they turned on the 5G signal and then your downloads were pretty much the same speed and your uploads were just terribly slow, that's why. We're not really funneling faster data to the tower. We're kind of sticking with the same data centers and backhaul and issues that we've got. But when we route all of this, we have better implementation of wireless technologies. We have better community technologies. Schools and libraries get an upgrade. Hospitals get an upgrade. And then from there, we also get the secondary benefits. A fiber-to-home infrastructure would also help with power management. That's what the FCC was testing in Tennessee. So in Chattanooga, where you can get like 10 gigabit data for about the same price that I paid Spectrum for miserable cable, the reason why the Department of Energy put money into investing in Chattanooga, Tennessee, was that it could be the backbone of a future energy grid. Right now, our energy grid is in really bad shape. What would fix our energy grid? Having more homes connected over fiber. Not with fancy 5G wireless home internet, you know, all set up a Pringles can and point it at the tower. That doesn't help us. We need actual cable connected, hardline connected, fast data. So this is a survey. I already filled mine out. It doesn't take that long, but they are asking for consumers' experiences. I should probably read just a little from the top of the brief. Accessing the internet from home has never been more essential for consumers. Nothing made this as clear as the COVID-19 pandemic, when people across the country turned to broadband connections to support their day-to-day lives. We are using more data than ever before, and the trend shows no signs of slowing down. Fixed and mobile broadband internet service providers have responded to this increasing demand for more data by offering higher bandwidth plans with faster internet speeds. Dubious. That was my addition, not in the article. These plans allow us to work from home, access medical care, complete homework assignments, and stream our favorite movies more easily. Many ISPs have also imposed limits on the amount of data we use, often referred to as data caps, that when exceeded may result in higher fees and slower speeds. If you would like to share your experience, please complete this form in the description field. You can provide specific details about your experience, including the name of the provider, data caps or usage limits associated with your broadband plan, your address, and any other information that describes the benefits or challenges that you have experienced due to data caps. Please contribute. And especially if you aren't, because right now Spectrum does not have data caps on their plans, but the provision in California's regulatory action on Spectrum, I think, lifted already. So at any point, Spectrum could look at their business model and say, well, now we can add those data caps. So that would be awful, and I would hate it. So even if you don't have a data cap, contribute to this conversation saying, hey, I use this, I utilize these services, I'm engaged with these communities, and if a data cap were to be added to my plan, it would be a painful experience for using the services that I prefer. Again, it's so frustrating. It's not going to be a quick turnaround. I'm sure damage is going to be done. As soon as this is going out at scale, and if anyone contributes to the conversation, all of these companies are going to say, oh, but now we need to rush and get them installed, and then it'll be harder for the government to undo those situations. It's going to be a pain. But if we're not a part of the process, then we have nothing to complain about, because that's apparently what we wanted. I'm going to take another drink of water here.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Dave Burns, we should bring back the Civilian Conservation Corps, but to build fiber infrastructure. I feel like there are so many people that have been sort of displaced by technology that could do really well in an economy where we utilized that labor and were able to do things like, hey, you're a part of this community, we could make your community better or more hospitable for business or better for education by installing these lines. It's really frustrating. It really is. And at some point, we're going to have to face a very tough conversation about what part of this is privatized and why are we still giving these companies tax dollars and why aren't we getting what we paid for? And if they can't deliver what they paid for, then we either need that money back or they need to reverse the trend of giving them like zoning deals and sweetheart deals and tax breaks, and they need to pay a bill. So, moving right along, I've got a pair of stories here from John Brodkin. He's sort of my man crush over at Ars Technica. Big fan of his work. I'm going to back-to-back these really quick, because it really still kind of makes me vomit in my mouth a little bit that Elon Musk can occupy so much of our news feed. And I don't know about y'all, but even for as many friends as I have on Twitter, my use of Twitter has plummeted. Where it used to be kind of a fun discovery service, and I would sort of page through things, and I would spend some more time and really try to interact and reply and comment and... And like, I would do most of my live stream reactions, live tweeting, you know, when there was a keynote or an Unpacked or I.O. or WWDC. And I'm just not feeling it anymore. I hate it because I had, like, such a good momentum going with the people that I followed on Twitter. And it's just sucked all the joy out of that. I mean, Lyndon, you're absolutely right, man. Lyndon says Mastodon is way cooler, not so hot take. I've been spending a lot more time on the Mastodons, and I like it a lot better. I only have like 400 followers on Mastodon, but like I get into a conversation and it feels so much less ratcheted for social media algorithms. So we've got a pair of Elon Musk stories here. The first Music publishers sue Twitter, slam Musk for calling DMCA a plague on humanity. Publishers sue after licensing talks between Twitter and record labels stalled. From the article, today, Twitter was sued yesterday by music publishers who are seeking $250 million in damages for alleged copyright violations. Members of the National Music Publishers Association, the NMPA trade group, say that Twitter does little to stop copyright infringement and doesn't pay for music rights like other social media companies do. Quote, Twitter knows perfectly well that neither it nor users of the Twitter platform have secured licenses for the rampant use of music being made on its platform as complained of herein, said the complaint filed against X-Core, a.k.a. Twitter, U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Tennessee. Quote, nonetheless, in connection with its higher interaction platform, Nonetheless, in connection with its highly interactive platform, Twitter consistently and knowingly hosts and streams infringed copies of musical compositions. Twitter also routinely continues to provide specific known repeat infringers with use of the Twitter platform, which they use for more infringement. And this is always going to be a catastrophic event. With the way that our copyright laws are written now, a little BTS. Patreon is looking at setting up their own private video hosting. So right now on Patreon, I do 4K videos for patrons. I do higher quality videos for the Patreon than I do than I publish publicly on my public YouTube. I feel Patreon is in for a rude shock when the content creators start trying to use their video platform at scale. One, you need a ton of server power to accomplish that. It is not easy creating a video streaming site. So those bills get expensive very, very quickly. If anyone is utilizing that service at any kind of scale, it really hurts your monetized streams. Two, they are going to have to recreate from scratch all of the systems, all of the processes, and all of the issues where, let's say someone's Patreon is, we're producing a movie review show. Would you like to contribute to us reviewing movies? Well, using clips of the movies on YouTube is already a ridiculous dance of interacting with copyright holders. Patreon is going to have to deal with that because that's also a directly monetized video relationship that's behind a paywall. So it's even a little bit worse than the way that YouTube can put advertising on that video, steal the ad revenue from the content creator, and give it to the person, to the company that holds the license of the movie. So you do a movie review show on YouTube, you probably aren't making money on YouTube. That money is probably going to the company that owns the rights to the movie if you show any of the clips of like the trailer or of the movie. So this is going to get ugly. But on top of that, music is also one of the least understood aspects of copyright law from online content creators. Oh, I only used 7 seconds. Doesn't matter. You could still be asked to remove content, be given a DMCA strike, literally sent a lawsuit if it's something that's repeat. There are guidelines where you can say, oh, but if you only use a little bit of it, then it's kind of okay. And, you know, commentary and critique, and it's transformative. And none of that is proactive. None of that protects you from having to deal with the company. You can put a DMCA, commentary and critique notice at the beginning of your video, and all of this stuff is being used under fair use. Fair use is a reactive place to argue. Fair use only works when you're in a court of law looking at lawyers from, like, Sony. And then you're having to defend your content to a judge who knows nothing about online media, internet distribution, but they know one side of the table has a whole bunch of people wearing really fancy suits and they're very expensive, and the other side of the table has a schmuck on the internet. So it is a very difficult process to properly protect transformative art, commentary, critique. This stuff is complicated and it's really messy. So it is kind of interesting seeing Twitter on this side of the issue where we know Elon Musk is desperate for quality interactions and boosting the visibility and the sort of the user base of Twitter. We're pretty confident that the valuation of Twitter has plummeted well below what he paid for the service, and he was probably paying more than what the service was really worth. And this dovetails, so $250 million doesn't sound like a lot when you're talking about a company that he bought for $40 billion, right? $250 million should be a rounding error. If that company was really worth $40 billion, that should be an easy bill to pay. But here's the deal. Elon Musk is not about paying his bills. So this follow-up story from John Brodkin on Ars Technica, Twitter evicted from office amid lawsuits over unpaid rent and cleaning bills. Twitter has been evicted in Boulder, Colorado, still faces unpaid rent suit at headquarters in California. So from the article, a judge in Colorado recently authorized law enforcement to evict Twitter from an office building in Boulder. According to news reports, the ruling came after the Elon Musk-owned company was sued by the building's landlord over unpaid rent. Quote, a judge for Boulder County's district court permitted law enforcement to evict the tenant on May 31st, directing the tech giant to evacuate its suites at 3401 Bluff Street in Boulder. Also an appropriate street name, because he was totally bluffing with his bills. That's not a part of the article. Back to the article. And returned the offices to the owner and landlord lot to SBO LLC. And this isn't even the only Boulder building where Twitter apparently failed to pay bills. At the other building on 1301 Walnut Street, Twitter is reportedly facing demands for unpaid rent and unpaid cleaning bills. And they're also facing demand for unpaid rent and unpaid cleaning bills in California. And last week, or was it the week before, we talked about Twitter not paying their Google Cloud hosting bills. So the services that Twitter utilizes to help manage some of their like content moderation, well, they're not really doing a lot of content moderation. There's some vile stuff that's just being routinely published on Twitter. And, you know, why pay Google Cloud bills if you're not really going to use your moderation team? Might as well just skip on those. And that also is dovetailing into the EU looking at Twitter's business practices and content moderation issues. And I'm just ready. I'm just ready for Elon Musk to really get served on this one. He absolutely destroyed my favorite social media platform. He did it with hubris. He did it with arrogance. He did it with the grotesque display of ignorance. And he's not even paying his bills. And he's been granted so much grace on, well, you know, it's a difficult transition. You're doing some cost cutting. You're trying to reduce labor force, blah, 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 blah. Still got to pay for the building. And you signed an agreement, and now you're trying to weasel out of the agreements that were made on behalf of the company. It's ridiculous, and it's gross. So those two stories. Again, I'm not taking much joy because it means my favorite social media site was properly wrecked. And Blue Sky's not going to get it done. Like Jack Dorsey trying to make another Twitter clone, not the gig. I've properly sort of moved over to Mastodon for all of like my personal sharing. And, you know, if I want to play a wacky little hashtag game, I'm not going to play it on Twitter. I had a really good one on Mastodon. So it was the hashtag game was add robots to classics. So I found a picture of sort of a Victorian-looking robot, and so my hashtag was, my reply was Sense and Sensibility and Cyborgs. I felt like that was a pretty good one. Because, you know, it's like, add robots, but it's also, you know, like, it's fitting the alliterative quality of the Jane Austen title, Sense and Sensibility and Cyborgs. I think it could be a real book. I mean, we had Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and was it Sense and Sensibility and Vampires or something? And you're like, you totally missed it. Because, like, it doesn't fit the sort of sound. Sense and Sensibility and Cyborgs should be a movie, like a parody movie that's in production right now. I was really proud of my witty Mastodon hashtag rejoiner right there. It's pretty great. McCorkran is asking, who's worse, Elon Musk or Spez? And we're going to talk about Reddit here in just a bit, too.
Oh, and there was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That's right. I love it. That's so bad. From Raj, Elon Musk's big plan to make Twitter profitable. Don't pay bills. I mean, again, when you're born into emerald mine wealth and you get like hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans from your dad to sort of start off your businesses and things, I'm not sure Elon Musk has a really good idea of what it's like to really build a business and pay those bills and hire talent and work through all those issues. He typically just throws a lot of money at a company that already exists and then... You know, he's gotten really lucky on some of these that they've hit really big and have made him a lot more money. I don't know that that's the American dream. The American dream is be born to a dude who owns a South African emerald mine. It doesn't seem to me to be the business acumen that we should be holding up as any kind of grand genius in this space. Because that was another story that went up over the weekend. A bunch of news outlets interviewing, I can't remember his name. What's his name? His username is Spez. Steve Huffman. Oh, God, that my brain is Swiss cheese. Steve Huffman, the CEO, one of the co-founders? Was he a co-founder of Reddit? But he's the CEO of Reddit. And he was on all the, like, sort of talking, interviewing news, traditional news outlets. We shared one of the articles just summing up the interview on the Discord. And, you know, when you back-to-back a couple stories about Elon Musk totally bombing Twitter, and then you hear someone like Steve Huffman proclaim that his plans for Reddit were highly influenced from conversations that he'd had with Elon Musk because Musk was showing people how you could make a company more profitable and how these businesses could make more money. And just really, I'd be really worried. I mean, this is, if it weren't really impacting people and destroying communities and harming the financial investments of numerous people that have put faith into these brands, this would be a Silicon Valley plot, right? This would be like a really bad joke about the Hooli offices rebranding something and then playing fast and loose with the financials of the company to beat that Pied Piper to market. And we'd laugh because how absurd would that be? And yet, here's Steve Huffman, Reddit CEO, saying, oh no, I was really inspired by Elon Musk. But no pushback. No pushback from traditional media because news agencies have no concept of explaining tech situations to general population readership. It's pretty bad. Dave Burns, they're both. They're botting him out the financialization of the tech space. The dreams of like Web 2.0 and the social media era of the internet are like disintegrating before our eyes, and it's horrific to watch. I've put so much time and so much energy into these platforms to try and host communities and discussions and conversations. And man, does that all feel wasted because it's not even going to be a footnote, right? Like if I just take this information down, it's like it never existed. It's like it never happened. It's like 9 years of my life on Reddit just vanished. So this is the big plan that they've got. Excuse me. A story from Tech Radar written up by Hamish Hector. Hamish? It might be Hamish. I always want to do a soft A like apricot or aunt, so it's probably not Amish because there's an H at the beginning of his name. Sorry. Reddit has a terrible plan to end blackout. Ask you to vote out protesting mods. Reddit CEO wants to bring an end to the Reddit blackout, but not by agreeing to reverse the company's upcoming API changes. Instead, he has suggested that users should be able to vote out the moderators leading the protest that's keeping large chunks of Reddit in the dark. Thanks to the blackout, Reddit, and by extension Google, currently feels like a shell of itself for many users. The initially two-day-long protest has been extended by many of its subreddit communities, with 4,906 still set to private or restricted at the time this article was published, including my pet project, Glowing Rectangles, is dark indefinitely until either Reddit backtracks from this API or I'm removed as the moderator. My community was little. We were only a top 20% subreddit, so I doubt we're high on the list for them to take any kind of action. But if you ever see Glowing Rectangles back up and operating, and you haven't heard about any of these API changes being reversed, then you can be fairly confident that I did not bring it back. Reddit did it for me. Again, I'm highly doubtful that they're looking at my subreddit and saying, yeah, that's the one that we need to replace, when they've got subs with hundreds of thousands of members. We were about to break 3,000 members, which is, I'm proud of that. That's pretty good. But yeah, it's been, since I took Glowing Rectangles private, I have not been on Reddit. Three or four times, my thumb has done the muscle memory thing of hitting Reddit is fun, my favorite app for using Reddit, and then I just swipe it closed. When you see what your front page looks like, with so many of my favorite communities still going dark, there is no value on scrolling through Reddit. Like, it used to be a part of my morning routine. I'd drink some coffee, I'd scroll through a couple pages of links and results and search, and then I'd kind of have a feel of what was going on in my day. Right now, the conversation we're having on the Discord is, how can we better craft, say, a return to a feed reader? So I got an open source RSS reader, and I'm kind of playing around with, if I go to a website and I really like an author, for example, my hilarious man crush on John Brodkin, being one of the best tech politics writers I've ever had the benefit of reading in my entire time of following tech politics as news stories. He is dreamy. I can go to Ars Technica, find his stories, and create an RSS feed where every time he posts, I can then maybe create like an alert on my phone where it plays really romantic music, and I'll know John's got another article. I'm going to go read that article. And so instead of going to an aggregator like Reddit, maybe I just got to make my own. And that sucks because it's effort and it's time and it you know, it's a techier solution that a lot of consumers aren't going to want to do. But then I am never beholden to any of the moves at Reddit ever again. Like when we lost Google Reader as a resource, it really sucked. And we had all those fun, playful experiments, like a stumble upon. Was a really fun user engagement for discovering content outside of the websites that you would normally go to, and you would follow people that were like-minded, and you could find this stuff through those interactions. I feel like the future of Web3, whatever we're calling Web3, because like the NFT version of Web3 is pretty much dead. We're now shifting over to the AI version of Web3. Instead of waiting for a platform to make your entertainment for you and to organize it for you and to sell you ads in ways that are going to be disruptive to your content consumption practices, maybe instead do it yourself. It's probably better for your mental health. It takes more time, takes a little bit of effort, but then you get to be a better person on the other end of this conversation. Instead of like letting Facebook and YouTube and Twitter just make you angry all the time because they know if you're angry, you'll spend more time on their platforms, be a happier and healthier person and just roll your own. That could be great. It's just really frustrating. It never should have gotten this bad. And the way that the Reddit executive team and Huffman himself are out presenting their case as, you know, like that Reddit was just populated by a bunch of freeloaders is kind of disgusting on a platform that makes platforms for people to build communities. And all of that was free labor for Reddit. There's a huge issue with equity in who really put the effort into making Reddit the platform that it is today. And it's not the CEO of Reddit. There is no vision of this, or version of this, I should say, where user spez was the genius behind Reddit operating at scale. It was the people contributing to Reddit that made it a platform that folks wanted to interact with. And they could have made this a reasonable change where the apps and services that also significantly contributed to the user experience at Reddit should be paying for, like, especially those apps that are really hitting Reddit's APIs hard. I kind of get it. But when Apollo saying, like, hey, this is going to cost us $20 million, there is no way that we can charge subscriptions from our users that would ever cover this API access, then you know it's punitive. And that's the thing that really frustrates me, that none of these sort of careful quotes from the Reddit CEO have ever been challenged by a reporter talking to Huffman. Instead, it's always just like, well, we need to make money. We've never been profitable. We tried to make NFTs a thing, and we've taken millions of dollars in investor cash. And so now we've got to tighten our belt. Reddit's been around for how long? And it's never been profitable. And they're trying to make these big moves, which have pissed off the value of Reddit, because the value of Reddit lies in its users. Who is going to invest in that? And there's talk of an IPO. I hope they do it. I hope with all this negative press, they move ahead with the IPO, and it would be delicious if it crashed and burned. I hate having to, like, comment. Like, I want internet communities to be healthy and vibrant. I don't want to see them fail. I spent way too much time on glowing rectangles, but it's also like, the hubris and the arrogance and the ignorance and how off the pulse they are and what they're obviously trying to manufacture in forcing people to use the Reddit website and the official Reddit app. These are all horrifically cynical moves that are clear. Like, the motives are pretty clear. And that's what I don't want to play with. At any time, they could have walked this back and said, we heard from the community. You know what? We hear you guys. And instead of doing this ridiculous plan to kill your beloved third-party apps, instead, we're going to find some other monetization solutions, and we're going to charge a more fair API rate. And actually, that would have been a genius fourth-dimensional chess move. Because if they had just said, hey, we're going to force you to pay a subscription for your favorite apps, people would have been pissed off. But they could have done this, like, we're outlandishly creating conflict. Everyone's pissed off. There's a 48-hour blackout. These app developers are basically done. Like, a lot of them have just kind of killed development on their third-party apps. And then they could have come back and said, you know what? We really care about our communities. But instead, you've got Huffman out there digging his heels in. This is the hill I'm going to die on. This is the line in the sand. I will go no further. People who use Reddit and make the content and host the communities are cranky, crybaby freeloaders. And I'm a CEO, and I've talked to Elon Musk, so I'm better than other people. He's never said anything like that. That's, I don't know, is it slander or is it libel? I can't keep track anymore.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, this is Zach of Zach Talks Tech. If you're looking to make sense of the tech that you love, if you're looking for an unfiltered opinion, someone who's just straight to the gun, gets right to it, no nonsense, come on over to Zach Talks Tech. I stream 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9:15 p.m. Eastern, and then I cut up clips of that show and I throw them out there for you on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But if you want to be part of the live show, check it out Monday, Wednesday, Fridays at 9:15 p.m. Eastern. Check it out, Zach Talks Tech on YouTube. That's ZAKTALKSTECH. Or as they call it up here in Canada, it could also be Zed. ZAKTALKSTECH. Check him out on all the socials. We'll see you there.
McCorcoran saying, yeah, even when you try to use an old Reddit extension, it doesn't work right on mobile. The text is just too small. Dr. Claw 77, I definitely use NewPipe. The TikTok ads finally drove me to it. Let's see. So Septian, wasn't it like 2015 when Reddit finally made an app to use for mobile? The Reddit app is terrible. There are poor moderation tools. You can't really do a whole lot with it. There are glaring gaps in things like accessibility for people that are parts, because that's the thing. Reddit is a community of communities. And so it was a great platform for someone to say, hey, like if you're seeing impaired, if you're vision impaired, these are the people that are working to foster conversations about getting through and using services and contributing to the economy of the 21st century. Like, you need places for those people to find each other and share good information and interact with each other. And the Reddit app was also really terrible for addressing accessibility and those types of concerns. So it's just pretty bad. Just really, really pretty bad. Oh, yeah, McCorkin. I don't know how bad it is now about that. The Reddit app used to freak when they caused battery drains on my phone when I had it. I couldn't nuke that thing fast enough. I don't know if it's still bad. I've basically always used Reddit is fun, RIF, because it is the most, like, again, it looks like a crappy old web 2.0, like the original version of Reddit or Dig. Just lines of links in the most boring format. Forum format that you could have. And that's what I wanted. Because again, I don't want panels and cards and photos and auto-playing video and it's algorithmically sorted. I don't want any of that. I want the clearest delivery of content that I have said I already wanted to be subscribed to. Excuse me. And so that's why I've always used RIF. And it really, really makes me sad. Really makes me sad. So that's normally where we would do, because we're at 10 o'clock now. This is normally where we would do the subreddit plug. Glowing rectangles is currently dark. And this makes me sad. My subreddit for my podcast wasn't really about me. I would routinely be included in the conversation of my subreddit. But the mission of reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles was we were building a community that focused on trying to promote content we felt deserved more attention. Again, we've been talking about algorithms on YouTube keeping creators from their audience. Like, YouTube is now a barrier between me and the people who have subscribed to my channel based on their metrics for what they think will immediately be the most popular. And a lot of my videos never get a chance. If it's not something that is already search popular before I publish it, then there's no discovery for my video after it goes live. But we could end run around that, and Reddit was a resource that we would use to do that. We could post it on Glowing Rectangles, and then it would find some community engagement on other larger subreddits. Glowing Rectangles was a feeder. New content would show up there, and then people would share it on other places around the internet and around Reddit. And with Glowing Rectangles being dark, and with the community of people that I have here in this live chat, I hope the mission of Glowing Rectangles continues. Your favorite content creators of all sizes need your help. The largest channels are seeing continuous viewer numbers degrade. So, medium-sized channels like mine are getting ravaged by the way that we are focusing on shorts and reels and disposable content. So if you like those more in-depth video reviews, I guarantee you they are being viewed less and they are making way less ad revenue or monetized traffic. And then this has been probably the worst time to start building a YouTube channel for people that want to join this conversation, broaden and give other perspectives on their own tech use. It's really rough out there. So even without this platform, even without this little subreddit, the great community that was on Glowing Rectangles, the mission hasn't changed. We still want to look for and find those opportunities to share, to discover, to promote, and to support the people that make the videos that we enjoy. So myself personally, I've been spending a lot more time on Mastodon. I've been sharing there, but anywhere you feel you can contribute to the conversation and promote and engage with a community it's going to be greatly appreciated. It's going to be even more appreciated today than it might have been in years past, just because of how how toxic the algorithmic sorted social media has become. So, it makes me sad. So Septian is saying, I never got the opportunity to be featured on Our Glowing Rectangles. You were always allowed to promote your own stuff on Glowing Rectangles. Sep, this is why you need to pay attention, man. I've been talking about Glowing Rectangles for 9 years. There was a little sidebar on Glowing Rectangles where you could read what the rules of the subreddit were. And one of the rules was, we allow self-promotion, which lots of subreddits did not allow self-promotion. So, Sep, yeah, you got no one but yourself to blame. This is what I mean. Like, people will look at one thing like, oh, it doesn't immediately benefit me, I guess I shouldn't participate, and then they miss. It totally could have benefited them. Now, Septian, when I say I'm sharing a lot on Mastodon, and I'm contributing, and I'm boosting the content from other creators, do you think that means don't participate at all, and maybe someday someone will highlight one of your videos for you and try to popularize your video with no effort made on your part? Because if that's what you're hearing, you need to spend some time figuring out how social media works. Sep, killing me. You're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me. Every week, you've been in the chat on so many of these podcasts. And I've said what the subreddit was all about. So let's see if Sep decides that he wants to maybe play with some other social media opportunities. Again, when I started Glowing Rectangles, it was an abject failure. I was working with a crew of content creators. I was trying to tell them, like, hey, this Reddit thing, we could put a dent in Reddit if we just worked together. If I post a video and everyone in this group gives it the little upvote, that is going to popularize it, and then we can build off of that. And I will do the same. You post a video and I'm going to click the little up arrow. And that's literally the lowest level of engagement possible. And what invariably happens is a bunch of content creators, it's like herding cats, a bunch of content creators post one thing and then go, nope, I didn't immediately get a million views, so I guess it's not for me, and then never contribute or participate or do anything that might help someone else, so they never get the benefit themselves. I'm on Mastodon. I only have like 400 followers on Mastodon. I am not a big deal on Mastodon. But I'm getting regular engagement and comments and interactions, and it's fun. And I'm starting to see little trickles like, hey, you got some hits from on your website from Mastodon. Hey, you got some video views on YouTube from Mastodon. So, Sep, if you were to participate on Mastodon, not just sign up for an account and then hope people do all the heavy lifting for your own promotion, you'd probably be seeing some content from Mastodon. Ted, that's hilarious. Ted says, Septian hears Mastodon and he thinks he needs to be chosen by Zordon. Love it. Oh, that's so good. That's so funny. And Twinfolk. Twinfolk is a perfect example. I posted my videos and other people's videos on Glowing Rectangles, definitely helped me grow my audience. And I'm so appreciative of you sharing that experience. And now this is the olive branch we need to extend to other content creators on other social media platforms. I've been talking trash, but if your thing is Blue Sky, share. Share other people's stuff on Blue Sky. Get them looped into the conversation. Talk to people in communities that are talking about similar topics. And you can put a dent in Blue Sky. There are only thousands of users on Blue Sky right now. If everybody in this chat, instead of going to Glowing Rectangles, did sort of a loop share of content on your favorite, and not me, but just your favorite content creators out there, you would be a statistically significant chunk of the tech conversation on Blue Sky today. You could go to Mastodon and be a statistically significant chunk of the conversation about any tech topic today. But we got to do it, and that's the problem. I'm mostly frustrated with the content creators. The people that engage, like the folks that are just like watching content and are down to share cool content, awesome. That's been fantastic. And that's what Glowing Rectangles was built on, was that kind of user engagement. Viewer engagement, I should say. But it's the content creators who are like, no, I tried it the one time in that one thing and it just didn't really work for me. And like, cool. Then 10 years later, a lot of those channels that I was trying to get involved with Reddit, because we were kind of like half a year. It would have been April of next year that I would have had my 10-year anniversary of Glowing Rectangles on Reddit. 10 years, most of the channels that I was trying to collaborate with, who at the time were really engaged, making tons of YouTube content, most of them are gone. And we look at what might have helped them build and promote and keep their channels sustainable. Well, promotion and engagement and sharing. But yeah, most of those channels are gone. And the few channels that remain are either infrequent or are significantly different channels than when I was originally starting this project, this Glowing Rectangles project. So if you like these tech conversations, you are losing YouTubers by the scores. Like, I don't want to run down the list, but so many of our best and brightest have walked away. Either infrequently post, completely changed their channel focus, only occasionally commenting or making videos, or have just completely left the platform. And that sucks. That's really sad. So, oh, Muppinish, thank you. I'll be your statistically biggest fan on Mastodon. Aw, I appreciate it. And Blaze Kick X is saying hello. I'm gonna assume it's like a hello, kind of a hello. That was lovely. It was thanks for jumping in. Thanks for joining the stream. And that was your first comment on the Twitch. That's awesome. That's excellent. Okay. Oh, Twin Folk. Actually, I think I got my my Blue Sky invite from Twin Folk. Twin, how long did it take you to get invites to give out? Because I'm looking. I don't know that I've gotten any. Because I was talking to a couple other friends about maybe hooking them up too. And I don't know what you got to do to get those invites. So just let me know. I'm not using Blue Sky a whole lot. But again, I feel like for other folks, if that becomes your jam, you want that singular sort of monolithic social media experience that can totally be gamed by algorithms and eventually made terrible by a CEO who doesn't know how to interact with communities and ratchets it for unrealistic monetization, then Blue Sky could be for you. I'm such a dork. All right. I'm actually going to reverse the order of these stories here real quick. First, I want to talk. We're getting ready. We're going to make it through the summer, and then we're going to be hearing some noise about the Pixel 8. The Pixel 8 Pro is shaping up to be one of my more anticipated phones for North America. Excuse me. Looking at kind of where iPhones are going, where Galaxies are going, where Sony's and Motorola's are kind of headed, there is a specific flavor of camera conversation that I really have high expectations for the Pixel 8 Pro. And I really feel like the Pixel 8 Pro could be doing something very interesting in that kind of premium camera tech space. But along the way, we're getting little glimpses of some other refreshes and updates. And I think it's kind of interesting to see the Google Pixel team working on not only camera improvements for Pixel phones. I was like, where's my Pixel 7? I have it on a charging dock right now. Not just camera improvements for the phone, but then also better API and app tools for other developers to use the cameras of a Pixel. So this was written up by Abner Lee over at 9to5 Google. Pixel Camera Services 1.1 adds night sight, auto manual focus, and zoom support. So I'd be very curious, hold on one second. I'd be very curious in the chat right now. I don't use the camera functionality built into other social media apps. So, you know, you open up Instagram, you're scrolling through Instagram, and you want to take a photo for Instagram. You can take a photo in Instagram. And to me, those photos always look terrible. But then I go to my phone's actual camera app, and the photos look way, way better. So, does anyone in this chat? I'm sure I have an incomplete survey here. I'm confident that most of the people in this chat right now rarely use the camera mode that's built into a social media app or service. That would be my hypothesis. But I'd really like to see some data. Who is opening Snapchat and going, I need to snap something in Snapchat, and I cannot leave Snapchat to go to my phone's camera app to get a better photo or video. And I don't know who those people are. I'm almost like 99.99% confident those are the folks that never watch my videos. So Ted is saying Snapchat on Pixel got way better. Ronald is saying, yeah, I don't use it at all. Lyndon is saying always the native camera app, but he doesn't have Instagram or Snapchat. Dr. Claw saying, I definitely don't use the camera mode for social media apps. I go to the phone camera. Dave Burns is saying, I don't post on social media because I'm ashamed of myself, and you shouldn't be. And you have a OnePlus 9 Pro, so you've got kind of an awesome camera. You should contribute more to camera stuff. Soar Hunter saying, never ever. Muppinish is saying, quick snaps, Snapchat, quality, temporary sharing, phone camera. Oh, quality sharing, use the phone camera. I gotcha. So again, Muppinish is saying, if it's in the moment, then they will use Snapchat. John Gao is saying, I only use Instagram camera when I send quick snaps to my girlfriend that don't get saved. So like the most disposable content, you're in the app, you know, you're going to use the app to share that. Okay, that makes sense to me. That makes sense. I am not geared for that disposable photo sharing. Like, I'm not expecting every photo I send to my family and friends is like a cherished keepsake. But like, for example, I got a great photo of my cousin's cat. And I don't think she's going to keep that photo forever, but it was a really cute photo. And maybe she saved it in her phone storage for a week or something like that. Like, I don't think in terms of social media disposability. I sent her a nice photo of her cat, and she can do whatever she wants with it. And that's my brain has these blocks, and I can't see how I would get past some of those blocks. So I do want to cover this. Pixel Camera Services 1.1. So the Pixel Camera Services is a little applet control that brings improved capabilities to other social media apps. So here, let me just scroll down. Google has been rolling out version 1.1 of Pixel Camera Services over the past few weeks, but only recently updated the changelog on the Play Store. Version 1.1 brings new available features for third-party apps. So now, say you have a Snapchat, you can use more of the Pixel camera functionality in the Snapchat app. So you get autofocus and manual focus and zoom in the Night Sight extension. Obviously support for Android 14 is going to be important with phones kind of right around the corner that are going to have Android 14 and other bug fixes and improvements. Now, this also goes hand in hand with a couple of recent camera updates that I also want to kind of talk about real quick. the Pixel camera app is a really funny app. I've talked to Google engineers about why they make some of the choices that they do. I point blank hit them with, I need some mode on the phone where I can control the focus. Because the Pixel is pure autofocus. Like, you can tap and you can select something, but so many times I have tried to do a handheld night sight shot of the sky and the phone refuses to focus to infinity. And I can't force the focus out to the stars. Especially if there's like a little bit of wispy cloud cover, or if there are like some trees, maybe like at like the corner of the frame, the Pixel will regularly, not always, but regularly just like, you must want to take a photo of that, not of the stars. And there's nothing I can do. There is no focus to infinity mode on a Pixel. So I think it's hilarious that in night sight, well, let me see if I can, I screenshotted it the first time it came up. This is hilarious because it's, I'm going to show like my phone screen on the stream here. Do I have it? Yeah. Oh no, I didn't get it. I have the Palm timer, but I don't have, let me just see if I can open up the camera and try and show it there. So you go into night sight and now, yeah, you're not going to be able to see this in the stream anyways, like 720p in a little window. And this is terrible podcasting right now. But now on a, I think on a Pixel 6 or higher, so not on a Pixel 5, but on a Pixel 6, 6 Pro, 7, 7 Pro, I believe the 7A, you can now do this focus thing. But it's hilarious because it's still not manual focus. But it's, you're priming the phone for all focus, near focus, like if you're taking a photo of a person, or far focus, like if you're trying to take a landscape or a night sky photo. We don't get this in the main camera mode. So I go into the camera mode, I go to my, tap my little options, and nothing. I have some new updated, sort of like the improvements to the macro focus are great, but there is no little bottom option for changing focus. In the regular camera mode, that would still be helpful, where I could tell the phone, I'm focusing on a person and I don't want the background, or I'm focusing on distance and I don't want something in the foreground. We don't get that. That is only, for some reason, that is only available in night sight. So play with it in night sight. Maybe you need to shoot a photo in daylight. You can go to the night sight mode. It's going to be an HDR photo. It's not going to do like any crazy weird night sight processing, but then you can tell the phone, I'm trying to focus farther out. I feel we have reached, or we haven't completely reached it, but I feel we are closing in on the usefulness of an overly simplified camera experience. Because after a point, we're still adding features. Right? Some kind of focus adjustment feature is still a menu setting someone has to interact with. But after a point, I kind of feel we are running into the limits of that being useful. So we're getting back to the classic days of point-and-shoot cameras. And do we all remember how awful some of those point-and-shoot cameras were? So you'd go into a mode menu, and then you'd get like 30 options on your screen for like food mode, and fireworks mode, and pet mode, and kids mode, and sports mode, and streaking taillights mode, and baba ganoush mode, and maybe you like quinoa mode, and big top circus mode, and bright color mode, and you don't use the simplified controls because you still have to go digging and sorting through them. But there's still the person who cares enough to mess with their focus would probably care to just have a regular focus slider that you could line up exactly the focus that you wanted. But that's exactly the philosophy that Google is working against. So you don't get the ability to adjust your shutter speed or your ISO. Instead, you get brightness sliders. So you can control the shadow and the brightness highlights in the viewfinder. that's great. But after a point, the person who really cares about adjusting the quality of their photography might at some point just want the ability to adjust their ISO and their shutter speed. We're right up at what is actually useful, what's actually functional, and then what's sort of a show of adding a feature, but it doesn't really contribute to the content creation process. So that was very long-winded of me. The other one that is kind of cool is I do like seeing, hold on, let me see if I can get it to just like focus out here. So I'm going to do, and this one I actually do kind of like that it's streamlined. So one of the reasons why I like Vivo and Xiaomi is we have settings for voice shutter. So here, we went out to the zoo the day before yesterday just for a nice little Father's Day excursion. And we took just a nice little family portrait. It's super bright. You can't really see stuff on the screen. My camera's going to overexpose that. But we took a nice little family portrait. I propped up the Xiaomi on a little tripod, and I run around to the other side, and Lex goes, cheese! And it takes a photo, and that's awesome. Voice shutter is really handy. The Pixel has never had any kind of remote shutter feature. And so now with this this Pixel update, the Google Camera 8.9 update, we do have, here, I'm going to throw this into, this is automatic, and I do like how this is set up. So when you turn on a timer, you get a 3-second or a 10-second timer. One of the triggers is the shutter button. So you push a shutter, counts to 10, takes the photo, everything's great. But automatically now, with no other mode, no other setting that you need to adjust, it's also going to watch for a palm. So here, let's see if we can do this live on the podcast. So I've done a 3-second timer, and I'm going to try and block my face so it really focuses on the phone and not me. Is it going to do it? I know NVIDIA is going to wig out, but I'm hoping my Panasonic. This is horribly blown out because my screen is way too bright. I'm going to look at this. I'm just going to hold up my palm. And it's doing the countdown. And it, I got there with a terrible, terrible look on my face. So that's a horrible photo of me. But I love that that's now just built into the timer. You didn't have to go looking for it. You didn't have to change anything. You turn on a timer. One of the triggers that's automatically turned on is palm detection. So that's a good one. For the other thing's me making fun of, like, you know, oh, you want to focus at the stars, you can tell it to do far focus. Well, can I just focus to infinity? No. That would be too complicated. But it's still autofocus. So if I tell it I want far focus and it still doesn't know that I want to focus at the stars, couldn't it still make a mistake? Sure, it's autofocus. So then can I just get manual focus and tell it to focus to infinity? No, that's too complicated. So yeah, I need to make fun of stuff like that, but the palm trigger is really good. I wish we could also, I hope we will also get a voice shutter at some point, because having people say cheese and hearing the shutter go off is just fun. I was sitting, like, Lex goes, cheese, and we hear, and then my mom's like, cheese. Like, she immediately takes another photo right after, and it's fun. Like, that's just silly. The second photo wasn't as good, but because we were all like moving and making wacky faces, so it was pretty good. That's again, just some really fun things to look out for. I am very anxious to see what the Pixel 8 brings, but it is kind of cool seeing some of these updates and developments. You can already be playing with this if you have a Pixel 6 or newer. I like the direction this is heading. I feel we're a year past having a dedicated standalone pro app for a Pixel. I would love to see Google's take on a pro raw, what is it? Samsung, the expert raw mode is a totally standalone manual mode camera app, and you get the best version of what the Galaxy hardware can do when you go over to that expert mode. I think we're a year past Google giving us something similar. Like, I really feel like with the Pixel 7 and the upgrades to those cameras and just how good the cameras are on that phone, we really should have had a manual mode, a first party control mode. So I hope that at some point soon, over the next couple of years, Google will say, yeah, the main use of this phone, what we envision the Google experience to be, is in the Google Camera app. And if you want to do some other things with your phone, here's a little plugin. You install it and it shows up as an extra mode, but it's really a completely standalone, separate camera option for you to install. Blaze Kick. If you're going to keep advertising 50 megapixel cameras, you should really give us a full resolution mode. That is becoming kind of a conflict in marketing versus what's actually being delivered to consumers. Absolutely fair. Very well brought up. Let's see. Yeah, Raymond, I'd love to have a 50 megapixel camera option on my Pixel 7 Pro. Back hosting. Meanwhile, at Google I.O., AI goes... As AI. Ugh. Isn't it funny how fads just flip like that? Just think, like, this time last year it was NFTs and crypto, and NFTs and crypto, and NFTs and crypto. And now it's like, nope, that ain't the hot new trend right now. The fad isn't trying to sell them apes. Nope. Ha ha! Gary the Fireman, if Google gives us a pro camera app, I feel like it will kill battery life. I don't know that it would really have any... So, like, using the Samsung Expert Mode, I don't think has any difference in, like, battery performance. If you're doing the compositing and the, saving even larger files, I think we would expect some higher battery draw. But not to the point where... it would really disrupt the use of someone out in the field in those moments. I don't know. I don't think it would be that bad. And just having it as an option wouldn't really change the vast majority of those experiences. Like, I'm really happy with the Pixel 7 Pro as a point-and-shoot camera. It is very good in those take phone out-of-pocket, quickly line up a shot that I'm going to care about kinds of situations. It would be... probably slightly higher power draw at processing and saving the finished photo, but I would be going to that mode specifically for that purpose. So I know it's doing something different than just the normal use of that camera. And I think it would be a lot like the Galaxy Expert Mode, which you have to install. It's a component you need to install. The Samsung camera app just doesn't include it by default. And I think they know... the majority of their users aren't even going to go looking for it. But that's also why I feel like the more we kind of hype up photography and camera tech and what the Pixel 8 Pro might be bringing with larger and newer camera sensors, those are the capabilities where we'll really be able to get more out of those camera sensors. I feel operating at just an auto HDR point-and-shoot level, the Pixel 8 Pro might not end up being a significant difference from the Pixel 7 Pro, in that take phone out of pocket, push shutter, put phone back in pocket kind of streamlined use. If I really want to demonstrate what that larger sensor can do, I would benefit from having a bit more control over that experience. And I know what I'm doing and why that might impact battery life a little bit more aggressively. It's really heady stuff, but I understand why Google is doing it. I understand why Google is making the moves that they are, and they're focusing on a very specific flavor of that experience, and I think they've nailed it. I don't think any phone touches a Pixel 6a for point-and-shoot photography. Like, it is kind of silly spending more than a Pixel 6a. And the improvements that you get with a Pixel 7, 7a, 7 Pro, etc., they are nice. But they're very fine improvements when we're only talking about that streamlined point-and-shoot use. Pixel 6a is the gold standard, especially at a price-to-performance, right? So knowing that the Pixel 8 Pro is going to be really expensive, I would like some ways to show you why it's worth spending a little bit more. And I would like that to come directly from Google without me having to find third-party apps to demonstrate why that hardware is so keen.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a megapixel coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious megapixels. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
All right. Gary the Fireman, Pixel 7 Pro is definitely the best point-and-shoot. I mean, it is so good. I mean, it really... It's not just like, oh, I like Google, so this is a better than the iPhone. It is... The Pixel camera app is sublimely simple. It really is. All of the little touches, all of the organization, how menus float in and out, how options are categorized, and where menus are placed, it does not get better for a streamlined interaction for photography. But you run into that wall pretty quick of, can I do more with it? Maybe not. All right. Lampros, that's okay. Lampros is saying, sorry, I haven't pressed like yet. Well, I'm glad you've corrected that gross inequity and that injustice is now rectified. Thank you for supporting and liking and sharing and commenting and all the folks on the Twitch and on the YouTubes. You're all good people and I enjoy chatting with you. So, the last thing that I want to wrap us up with, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on this because it's not going to happen right away. This is a really big deal story. I hope we see manufacturers work towards adopting policy sooner, but knowing that regulators in the United States are just now trying to figure out if broadband data caps are bad, the EU has become our shining hope for the future of consumer experiences. If it's right to repair or net neutrality policy or broadband equitable distribution or using standardized cables so we don't have proprietary cables creating e-waste, it's basically all the EU. The EU is leading the charge and every other consortium of countries is struggling to keep pace. We might finally be seeing the end of the glued shut glass sandwich smartphone. And I could not be happier to see that. So just passed, the EU is adopting sweeping regulatory action on batteries. And this is from europarl.europa.eu, the European Parliament, their actual news feed. For press releases and news reports on adopted policy and regulatory action. The title of their post here, Making Batteries More Sustainable, More Durable, and Better Performing. So this these new regulations are going to focus on more stringent targets for waste collection, recycling efficiency, and material recovery, tougher sustainability, performance, and labeling requirements, due diligence policy to address social and environmental risks, portable batteries and appliances will be easier to replace. And that's one of the important ones. Designing portable batteries and appliances in such a way that consumers can themselves easily remove and replace them. And that is going to include a vast array of consumer electronics. I want replaceable batteries back in laptops. I want replaceable batteries on tablets. I want replaceable batteries back on our phones. All of those old advertisements on things, like when Samsung would make fun of those wall huggers, and I can just pop the back off my Galaxy phone and put in a new battery and have a whole other day of use, those were all consumer benefits. There is a reason why I still use the Galaxy Note 4 as a teleprompter, because I have twice now replaced the battery on the Galaxy Note 4, and it's taken me seconds to perform that battery replacement, because I peel the back. I mean, it is a gross sound when you peel the back off an old Galaxy, but then you take the battery out, and you put the new battery in, you hope it doesn't puff up and explode, because it's Samsung, but then you pack the back on the phone, and you push the power button, and your phone is like new again. And it's amazing, and it's awesome. And we lost that, and that was sad. We never should have given up on actual practical features. And so we go, I'm picking up the phone, and you know, like, it's really nice in the hand. And it's really nice in the hand, and that's what's important. And not talking about features for the phone, but like, does it feel like it was made for an evolved primate? Like, if I have opposable thumbs, the glass feels really nice. It feels premium. And glass has always been a stupid thing to make the back of a phone out of. So I'm here for it. This new policy is set to go into effect in 2027. So that's kind of a bummer. But over the next 3 years, 3.5 years, hopefully we'll see companies start to get ahead of it. It would be really nice if we saw an arms race. So let's say Samsung at the end of 2025 or the beginning of 2026, we're bringing back a classic design feature of the Galaxy smartphone, and we're really excited to share this with consumers. And, you know, we've listened to our community, and this is something that you said you cared about, and we want to be at the forefront of bringing this back in a way that's meaningful to our customers. If you want to quickly swap your battery out in the field, or if you need to do a battery replacement, you don't want to disassemble your phone to do it, we here at Samsung have heard you, and we care, and we've spent millions of dollars advertising this. I would be here for it. Let's do it. Let's make it an actual discernible difference, and then it looks like Apple is copying Android. For a change, that would be nice. If we could get a manufacturer in late 2025 or in early 2026 to just do it, and then Apple, you know, dragging their heels on it until they absolutely need to do it in 2027 or in 2028, it would make Apple look like, oh, we had to copy this Samsung feature because we're Apple. Oh, no. This is exactly one of those moves. You see it. It's on the horizon. What company is really going to get us back there first? Like, just do it. Don't sit there and fight it. Make it a part of the brand identity that everyone else will look like the follower. And you will get consumers interested in that. But you got to tell people about it. Like, if Motorola does it, no one's going to care. Because Motorola will do it. They'll do it great. The phones will, I mean, so many, I think some of their phones still have removable batteries at the entry level. Do I have that wrong? Or are they all sealed now? I can't remember. But if Motorola does it, they're not going to put any advertising behind it. They're not going to market it. They're not going to tell people about it. They're going to hope that a couple YouTubers don't completely trash their brand in a review, and that'll be good exposure. And then it doesn't go anywhere. It'll just be, well, you could get a Motorola if you cared about one of those weird features like a removable battery, I guess, but it's not a Sam Apple, so no one's going to buy it. But, you know, like Sony does something like this, that would be awesome. But it's not going to matter if you don't market it, you don't tell people about it. So I'm really excited. Props to the EU. Again, a regulatory action that is absolutely in consumers' best interests, should help reduce the amount of e-waste, much, much tougher policy on recycling, you know, getting these rare elements back out of our consumer electronics and not always having to like deal with toxic landfill and e-waste situations. Minimum levels of materials recovered from waste batteries, up to 50% of lithium by 2027 and 80% by 2031. So in less than 8 years, the EU is mandating that if you make a product and it has lithium in the battery, you need to be able to recover 80% of that lithium by 2031. Cobalt, copper, lead, and nickel, 90% reclamation and recycling, 95% by 2031. That's insane. I am so here for that. I want it so bad. I mean, again, I know that like this is a tremendous engineering challenge for all of our consumer electronics companies, but I kind of wish, like, why not make it 2025? They could be designing those phones today that could then go into operation at the end of 2025. Just do it. Just make them do it. Oh, I guess you can't sell any new phones for a year until you redesign. Oh, that's a bummer. Better get to work. Raymond, the photo that I use for this week's thumbnail for the podcast is my G4. Raymond, it says it makes me miss my LG phones. And it's hilarious. Like, I pick up the G4 and I peel off the back and it's got a 2900 milliamp hour battery. How did I ever used to use that thing as a daily driver? Especially with that Snapdragon 808, like, cooking my pants pocket and running that phone super hot. Oh, it's so hilarious. Oh yeah, Dave Burns. It's you got to laugh to keep from crying. Dave says, "I love how the U.S. has given up on any possibility of holding these companies for their externalities they socialize on us. Like, there's no. Are the companies making money? Well, then it must be good for the economy, Dave. If Apple makes more money by making your phone completely unrepairable, then why do you hate America, David? I feel like that's the real question that no one's asking." makes me so sad. Yeah, Gavaletta, you should just hire Shia LaBeouf and pay him to just say, just do it. So we're getting to kind of the end here. Muppinish is asking, Juan, do you know any phone with the same form factor as the Xiaomi Mi Mix, a boxy square phone? I don't think any recent. What does the Xiaomi Mi Mix look like? Typing sounds. Isn't that the one that was like all glass? Is that the one I'm thinking of? Limited availability phone points to the future of phone design, though it could use a better camera. I can't see any photos of this thing. What was the Mi Mix? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you want more squared off sides, I mean, the new Xiaomi phones have flatter sides, but they're rounded. They're more iPhone rounded up at the corners. You could look at a Note. The Galaxy Note 23 is a pretty rectangular shape, but the sides are a little bit more like rails than flat sides. I like the Xiaomi Ultra. I'm taking the case off of mine right now. But it's a much flatter chamfered edge, flat design on the 13 Ultra. I don't know that anything has really come out quite like the Mi Mix. That was really loud. Apologies. I'll try and edit that out of the audio version of the podcast. So, yeah, I mean, outside of the companies that do flat sides. So what is that? That's Sony, the Xiaomi 13 Ultra, the Xiaomi 13s. I mean, some of the, like, the other like Xiaomi adjacents, the Pocos have done that. The Infinix has done that. My Infinix is a really, really flat-sided phone. But yeah, I never really got hands-on with the Mi Mix. That was one that kind of passed me by at Pocket now. So, you're using a Mi Mix instead of your Xperia? Wow. Okay. Wow, that's pretty intense. Yeah, and I don't know about the Red Magic. The Red Magic 7 had flat-ish sides, but it had a lot of that, like, gamer-influenced design where it got, like, you know, cyber panels on the back that are lumpy and bumpy and stuff. But the sides might do it for you. I don't know. I want to make my phone one rounded edges. I hate the boxy design. It's the funny thing, man. We go through these fads, and Apple did flat sides on the iPhone, so now everyone's got to copy Apple's move on that. I prefer flat sides because I use my phone as a camera so often that when I'm holding on to something for photography, I want the best grip. But when, you know, you're using it like a phone, you've got kind of the rounded sort of sides that contour more to your fingers. That can be nice. I have the Vivos over here. Or I might have had the Vivos over here. I don't have the Vivos over here anymore. The Vivos are a lot like the LG Velvet, where they feel shockingly thin in the hand. They're almost kind of scary to hold and use out in public because the phone itself is super, super thin, but then the rail tapers to like this super tight edge that your fingers have very little surface area to interact with. So, yeah, design is a funny thing. And it's also one of the reasons why I keep pointing out, like, there is no one-size-fits-all solution. There is no clear winner. Just because something is popular doesn't mean it really is going to be a good solution for all the people out there who might have a preference. I have a preference where I like flat sides, and someone else has a preference where they like rounded sides. We need phones that have those differences built into them so that we can get the products that really fit our needs. And it's going to be a different phone, right? It's not going to be the same phone. And something as innocuous as, is it a rounded side? Is it a beveled side? Is it a flat side? Can make a purchasing decision for someone. And we don't really do a good job of discussing that in our phone reviews. It's usually more, what's the most popular? Well, that must be the winner, so everyone must want phones that are designed that way. Another reason to push back, I mean, is again, for Blaze Kicks, you know, someone who's just casually declaring iPhone's the winner, they're making your phone purchasing buying experience worse if you don't like flat sides. So Ghost Starscream, why not an in-betweener like the S23 or S23 Plus? That's kind of what the Xiaomi 13 Ultra is, where you've got tapers into a thinner flat strip. But my preference is actually the Sony. I love the Sony form factor. I like that it's thin, but that the entire sort of depth of the phone is a flat edge to hold on to. But the phone itself is so thin that it sort of fits. And especially like as the phone kind of rests in the pad of your hand, it's kind of my jam. That's why I like Sony design. So, Muppinish, I'm actually considering getting the 6 gigabytes of RAM version of the Mi Mix because I can run most apps on this phone, but then I'll probably root it and get Android 11 up and running. I never went hands-on. I'd be kind of curious just to see, like, it was such a radical design for its time, if it even feels that different from phones today. And McCorkran, I'm getting sick of how fragile they are. Like, the new Pixels are beautiful, but they're almost impossible to use without a case. It kind of takes the fun out of it. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think a lot of us have been talking about for a while. A move like having user-replaceable batteries again would actually do well for us having other things. Like, if I can remove the back of the phone, we can go back to having customizable back plates. So, sure, the phone ships with this kind of back, and it's probably going to be some sort of plastic or glastic, but then maybe I want to use something different, like Kevlar. Or have it like a faux vegan leather kind of a back or something else that I can pop in there and use that will be better for my needs. Maybe I don't need a case and I can go with just a different material for the back and not just put a sticker on my phone to achieve that. So it'd be pretty nice. I would like that a lot. Let's see. Gary the Fireman. Yeah, razor wire does not feel good in the hands or anywhere else. I'm real glad that we don't make phones out of rusted rebar and, like, you know, broken razor blades anymore. You know, when you see those phone reviews and they're like, yeah, it feels really nice in the hand. Because, like, we used to make phones out of, like, you know, exploded concrete. That was bad. Yeah, Kafa Cash, I miss the customizable backs and flashing antennas. Oh, this is a glory age of, like, oh, let me try this ROM, and let me root this, and let me get access, and let me dig into the file manager, and let me do some ADB commands, and let me Dremel out a chunk of my smartphone so that I can put in a better speaker or clear the vent and the casing. And there was a lot of fun to have to be found in those older phones. Oh, awesome possum. I would totally be down. Why is faux leather popular? I want to see vegan dyed woolen textiles. So I'm with you there. Vegan leather, I think, has reached popularity because it feels like leather, and that's premium. But, you know, like we were mentioning, I have two LG G4s and I have a Moto X2 that have actual leather, like animal-made leather on the backs of those phones. And we probably don't want to operate cell phone manufacturing at any kind of scale using animal products like that. I get it. I get why people would be anxious or concerned about things like that. But you want to simulate the texture or the feel. What you're describing, hemp fibers, actually make way more sense. And you could do things like a really rugged, cottony kind of feel, but made out of hemp or hemp plastics, or we could do some really interesting things. I'm so upset. We all just kind of decided glass was the nice thing to have on the back of a phone. Kevlar was incredible on old Motorolas. We have problems with carbon fiber, but we could work with manufacturers for improving the antennas around carbon fiber to make that work. Carbon fiber would be really cool. And then we always had the Lumias with that really nice satin finished polycarb. So it's made out of plastic, but it doesn't feel cheap. It feels really, really premium when you pick up an old Lumia. And there are all of these other things that we could be doing, but glass is good for some of the signal that we've got to work around. It's probably better for wireless charging, I guess. I don't know. I'm not an electrical engineer with enough experience to know if, you know, passing conductive charging through glass versus plastic versus vegan leather has tangible differences on the electrical performance. But I feel like, again, I'm being overly cynical here, but I feel like another part of this was getting to the end of the manufacturing and saying, if we make the back of the phone out of glass, statistically, a lot of people are going to break the back of their phone and they'll be displeased with that. And it'll encourage them to buy a new phone sooner than they probably would have. We've also made it extremely difficult and extremely expensive to replace that back glass, which they're just going to break again. Instead of dealing with all that hassle, they'll just go buy a new phone. Instead of keeping their phone for 3 or 4 years, they'll buy a new phone at like a year and a half when they get tired of putting, you know, clear tape on the back of their phones to keep shards of glass from like poking them in the leg. I really feel like we got to a point with glass that they are looking at the buying behavior of their customers and the contribution of having a broken phone impacting their purchasing decisions. It's a bummer. It's dumb. It's real dumb. Oh, and Raymond, at 3D printing my own back would be nice. I really need to kind of get on board some of these newer 3D printers. I am completely deficient in that conversation. I have zero experience actually trying, using, or testing 3D printers. From the original days where they started going out to makerspaces, I played around with it a little bit with design, and then never did anything else with it. And I really feel like that might be something I need to come back to. Especially like a total noob tries 3D printing for the first time. What could go wrong? Number 7 will blow your mind. And maybe that's where I also have to take my channel and piss off the YouTube algorithm with talking about things that aren't phones. So, Sorry, I'm going to read this last comment, then we got to wrap this up. Capitalist Juan be like, phones need an auto timer that goes off after they've been in use for more than 24 months or after two major software version updates, whichever comes first, and then you buy a new phone. Because that's kind of technically what Chromebooks are, right? After like four... What is a Chromebook? Is it 6 years now or is it 5 years? Because after you're like done, you're done. There are no extended software updates or anything for Chromebooks after a certain point. Where, I mean, Microsoft looks at least 10-year cycles for at least getting bug fixes and security patches. 7 years. Thank you. Dave Burns is in with the thing. For some reason, I thought it was like five. But the problem is I've had people go and buy older Chromebooks. So if you buy a Chromebook that's like a year or two old, you don't get 7 years from when you buy it. You get 7 years from when it was released. So they could still be in line for like 5 years of support, even though it's new to them. It's not new to Google. But, you know, Microsoft bad. So I've got a lot on my plate. I don't know what's really going to be coming out. So the only thing I know I'm really going to try to push to finish up is my earbud review. These are the status between 3 ANC. I've been listening to these for a couple weeks now. They had their big release, and unfortunately I missed their sort of reveal to put a video out and talk about these. But triple driver, true wireless Bluetooth earbuds. There's a lot to like here. I've been digging them. Very, very comfortable too. So there will be a video this week out on Between 3 from Status Audio. I'm hoping that the Xiaomi versus Sony camera video can be finished. I really don't know if I'll be able to get that done. And then I do have a sponsored video that will hopefully be out this week, just kind of talking about some fun car tech, which is, again, becoming a thing that I'm having a little bit more fun just like, hey, let me dig into my car's fuse box and move a few things around. And look, now my old beat-up Nissan is a higher tech contraption than it used to be. So hopefully some of that can finally be finished off and we can show some of those videos too. So stay tuned. It's going to get weird. That's about all I can promise you is I have no idea what this channel is going to look like over the next week or two. So, Twinfolk, can't wait for your review of those earbuds. I like them a lot. There are a couple little sticky bits, but for a premium Bluetooth earbud, they're going to get a positive review. They're getting a positive review. So stay tuned. Follow all of the other content creators that are making some cool stuff. I expect some great streams coming from that crew, like Gadget Goddess, Kimmy, Easy Computer Solutions. I don't know if Ike Talks Tech is back on a streaming schedule. I don't know that he streamed last week. But TK and I will also be streaming our normal Thursday or Friday, depending on what our schedules line up for. I think LaShawn's probably on Friday. Jeff, El Jefe Reviews, streaming over the weekend. Sam, I don't know if Nomad Tech Project is going to be streaming. It would be nice if I could promote Sam's podcast with some kind of plug in my podcast and a piece of audio that I could cut and say, hey, this is a podcast I enjoy listening to and you should listen to it also, but there's no way to know. There's really just no way to look it up or to know if he's going to be doing anything. And a bunch of other people that are making some really quality content over the week, so stay tuned. Plenty of tech conversations. Please get out there and share. Support your favorite content creators. They all need your help. We need to be the little collection of geeks that look out for each other because the platforms are not looking out for us. The platforms are not getting it done. So I hope everybody had a fantastic Father's Day. Even for celebrating just family in general, I hope you were able to break bread with people who care about you. And I hope today is a fun Juneteenth if you're taking the day to celebrate, again, another aspect of our culture and our history and ways that we can bring these communities together to learn about each other. I'm really excited to be spending this time with my daughter and explaining to her what Juneteenth is all about. So I like that storytelling. I'll be back next week, another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm going to try and keep it a more traditional news block, gadget block kind of week, but I might get lazy. We might make it softer. I did one pajama podcast this month because of weird scheduling issues. So, I don't know, maybe next week will be sort of a half podcast, half pajama chat or something like that. I don't know. Like I said, this week is going to be weird. Take care, everybody. Take care of yourself so you can continue to take care of others. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode. I love you all. Be safe. Take care. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.